Shallowy driving it toward the back post for Zusi, who puts it back across, and Shelton slots it home. Zusi can have a hit from here. He does. And Graham Zusi, re-elect Graham Zusi. Shallowy knocks it in. The Hungarian assassin has given Sporting KC the lead. It's Russell.
This is the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Presented by Michelob Ultra. Enjoy a Michelob Ultra today. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And by Casey's Own CBD American Shaman. Score yourself free samples of great all-natural CBD products at a CBD American Shaman near you. CBD American Shaman. Everything is better with the feather.
Now your host, Nate Buchady.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you stream your video content. We appreciate you checking out the show, listening, liking, subscribing, all of those things. And we are presented by Michelob Ultra. As always, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. On my left is the one and only, soon to be wed, Allie Trost. Allie, how are you?
Yeah, last show is just Allie Trost. We'll be Allie Trost Martin this time next week. Except I won't be on that show, but the next show.
You're not going to join us 2 days after your
I mean, I can phone in from my honeymoon.
Question
if you guys are interested.
Right now. I mean, what are we committed to, our husband or the show? Allie,
always for the show.
And to my right is the already married Jacob Peterson. Jacob, how are you?
I am great. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you, man. We got a lot to talk about on the show today. We had a wonderful weekend at Children's Mercy Park, where the United States men's national team played to a sellout crowd. A performance we'll rehash against Uruguay, 0-0, the final score in that one. Almost 8,000 fans for the KC Current game over the weekend as well. Really just a good showing for Kansas City when it comes to the world of soccer in advance of a massive announcement that's coming up a little over a week from now with FIFA letting us know whether or not Kansas City is going to be a World Cup city coming up in 2026. We'll talk about all those things. And then, of course, we're going to have Uri Russell come on the show, midfielder for Sporting Kansas City. We'll have a deep dive into his background and talk about him growing up in the Barcelona system and then coming to the United States as a 19-year-old. And then we'll preview a big matchup coming up against the defending Supporters Shield winners, the New England Revolution. And they've got some news on the transfer market that came out this week as well. So we'll talk about all of those things also. So we got a lot coming up on the show. And let's start with it, guys. Children's Mercy Park. We all had a different perspective on this thing. I went as a fan. I did do a little pregame show here from 2 to 3 at the Budweiser Brewhouse, which was fun. Allie, you were working from a fan entertainment standpoint,
yes,
getting everybody fired up for the game. Jacob, how did you take in the game on over the weekend?
Well, I taped it, and we went to took the family with the off week to a festival. Shawnee Mission, or not Shawnee Mission, it was Shawnee, Old Shawnee Days.
Old Shawnee Days.
Yeah. Yes. So then I watched it back later.
Okay.
Watched it a couple times, actually. But you guys were there, so you guys tell me how I heard that the atmosphere was great.
Yeah.
And Allie, you were hyping up the crowd.
I was doing my best. I mean, the crowd was already very hyped. I think we were all kind of wondering what the turnout would look like. And, I mean, it ended up being an absolute perfect day for a soccer game. I mean, the weather could not have been any better. But especially coming off of the comments from Christian Pulisic when they played in Cincinnati, not very happy with the fan turnout at that match. It was hard to see an empty seat. Now, the Uruguay, like, fans wearing the jerseys that looked very similar to the color of the light blue seats at CMP, those kind of looked, even though there were fans in the seats, those were the only ones that looked empty, even though they weren't.
I went with my family. We sat in the south stand. And it, for me, like, I don't get to do that very often, obviously, because we're working the games here. It was a reminder to me that there just isn't a bad seat in this building. First of all, that was the kind of thing that stood out to me was, you know, I honestly went online when they went on sale and bought the cheapest tickets they had because my opinion was there's not a bad seat in this place. And the seats were great. Like, our vantage point was awesome. We were right behind Christian Pulisic as he took a couple corners at the end of the game. We did have a decent number of Uruguay fans right around us, and they were loud and they were in full voice. But the American fans were great. They were louder. And honestly, having both in the stadium made it kind of fun. I mean, my son at one point, and he comes to all the sporting games. He's been to, you know, cup finals here and all that, said he thought it was the coolest atmosphere he'd ever been to because it was the national team. We'd seen the national team play here before, but not to crowds like that, not to the type of energy there was. So I thought that was great. And I could be wrong. I can speak for myself. I was more excited for this game than I think any national team game I've seen here because I'm more excited about this team, I think, and this upcoming World Cup. And we got to see a lot of these young, exciting players. There wasn't really, in terms of players that were available, and in other words, not injured, I'm drawing a blank if there's any. I guess I kind of wanted to see Cameron Carter-Vickers play a little bit. But other than that, like, I got to see all the guys I wanted to see play in the game, and I thought most of them showed pretty well.
Did it help for you at all that they've already qualified? Did that help make the viewing experience more enjoyable?
I mean, yes, because I thought, like, people kept asking me, what is this game? Does it really matter? It's a friendly. Why should people pay money to come watch it? For me, this is one of the only opportunities they have to get ready to ramp up for this World Cup. You just don't get that many chances to work together as a team. So I thought there was a lot to play for in this game. The result not being the situation, but the performance being the thing that mattered. And
a good number of positions that still need to be locked down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I think, to me, the biggest thing about these international friendlies now is who's going to lock up some of those positions that are kind of up in the air right now.
What
the
think,
number
Jacob?
Nine being still, I mean,
yeah, we'll get
kind
to
of a
that.
Big one.
Yeah,
we'll get,
but what did you think overall of this?
Well, and Stu Holden said it on the broadcast, and this was really their best competition.
Yeah.
The best team that they're going to play leading up to the World Cup in, 6 months or so. So it was a good test. It was a really good test because that Uruguay team is really good, and since they made that coaching change, haven't lost, I don't think. So they've been flying. And it was cool to see that midfield. I think for me, that's Weston McKennie. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he was injured. Only played 45 minutes in that game. But to see him and Adams and Musa, who are so dynamic, and that's – I mean, there's so many – we were having this conversation earlier – there's so many good players on this team that there are going to be guys who deserve to start who are going to be left off.
Yeah.
Brendan Aaronson is one of my favorite players that the U.S. have. And is he a winger? Is he a center mid? He played center mid in Cincinnati against Morocco and was the best player, maybe the second best player behind Pulisic out on the field. But, I mean, there are just so many good players. Where do you play Weah? Do you play him out?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you play him up top, as you mentioned? But they go, I mean, 6-7 guys deep, especially in that midfield. There are a lot of good players. So I thought it was cool to see that group because that's going to have to – I mean, especially against England, you're going to have to outwork them. And we've got the young guys to do it.
Well, and one of the things when you mention those players, the midfield and the wingers, like if you just take that group as one thing – I love that fact because also we're talking about some dynamic guys with pace that you can bring in off the bench in the 60th minute of games. And I feel like my memories of World Cup teams that have been really good, and this is really old, but I remember 1998 France having an 18-year-old Thierry Henry. He didn't start on that team. He came off the bench, and what a nightmare. And you've been chasing this France team around on the field for 60 minutes. And when you get to play in the World Cup, you're playing games in short succession. Guys are going to get tired and all that. And I don't remember us being the U.S. having guys with that type of dynamism and pace that can start a game. And then two more that you can bring in off the bench that have fresh legs in the last 30 minutes of a game. I feel like that could be a major weapon.
Because we haven't. We haven't had this deep of a roster where you can go multiple guys in, and it's just not one or two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these guys are playing at the biggest clubs in the world. Even the guys who are playing in MLS can come in there, and MLS has improved so much over the years that, I mean, I thought Paul Arriola had a great game when he came in. It's just that energy and that passion that he brings that, maybe there are better players individually skilled, but man, I want somebody like that on my team because mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're going to get from him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's just so many good guys, but it does come down to, and everybody's talking about it, but who's going to play nine? Who's going to play that number nine? And I mean, that's a tough one for Greg Berhalter to figure it out.
Okay, let's do it then, because to me, it's who's going to play left center back right next to Zimmerman. It seems like Zimmerman's got it locked down, and who's going to play the nine? So let's go do it right now. The World Cup starts tomorrow, Ali. Who are you writing down as your number nine to start the game?
I mean, I think you've got to go with whoever is in the best form, because you need, I think, that player to be incredibly confident going in. Why are you smiling like that?
So give me a name.
I mean, it's hard because I was literally tweeting. I was a conductor of the Ricardo Pepi train, like literally 6 months ago. And now, I mean, has he scored a goal? Like,
well,
do we know? I
can't. It's like you got number nines that are playing in the biggest leagues, like the top five leagues in Europe, and they're not scoring goals. Then you got guys that are playing in the tier of leagues that are really good, but right below those top five that are scoring goals. So which is the better thing to have? Which is the more important
thing?
But, like,
isn't form one of the most important things? Like, you need that
That's
confidence.
What Greg Berhalter says.
I mean, how are they going to?
So who's in the best form? I mean, Ferreira's leading MLS in goals right now.
I guess I'd go with Ferreira, but I wasn't particularly impressed against Uruguay, but I was impressed overall by the
you
team's
gotta
performance.
Pick somebody,
I'm going with Ferreira, I guess. Not happy or confident about it, though.
Because this is the thing. Everybody, like, you know, every pundit out there thinks they know better than Greg Berhalter what he should do. Somebody's going to have to make a decision. He's going to have to make a decision.
Yeah, and I don't think that I'm not the coach of this team, so fortunately the decision does not fall on my shoulders, but I would go with the player that's in the best form. Now, everyone on Twitter would scream, but he plays in MLS, and that is
that
a big
matter.
I know it doesn't matter, but that seems to be a knock that people have on some of these guys who have made it into the roster that do play in MLS.
All right, Jacob, who are you going with?
If our first game is, I think it's Wales, right? Is that the first
yep,
game? If that was next week, I'm starting Ferreira.
Yeah.
And then Obobese is my number two off the bench.
Obobese.
He wasn't called into this camp, but he's tied with Ferreira, top of MLS in mm-hmm. goals. Young player. He's been in that mix before. He's also flexible, just like Ferreira, can play out wide as well. I would have to go with one of those guys who are scoring. I'm not going to go to a guy who's not getting major minutes on a team just because he's in Europe. That makes absolutely no mm-hmm. sense to me. Pepe or Sargent or somebody like that. Wright, maybe. Like, he's scoring goals, but, I haven't seen enough to really know. But I'm going Ferreira for me.
Let me ask it from this standpoint, because I think form is a huge component to it. But I also think that fit is a big component to it, because – it can depend on the style of play you want, right? Daryl DK was a darling for a lot of people because he was scoring goals like crazy in the championship. Well, he was on a team where his big physical style worked. They lumped the ball into the penalty area. He'd bully guys around and score a goal. That's not exactly how the United States men's national team wants to play. They're not looking to just bring it down the flanks and whip crosses in like crazy. They've got this great midfield that can build, and they've got wingers that are dynamic. What's the right fit? I'm not even asking you for a name, Jacob, but what type of center forward, if you could just draw it up, what type of number nine? Are you looking for a big target guy? Are you looking for a guy that can link up really well and make dangerous runs? What type of player would be the best for this team?
Well, the exact type of player that Jesus Ferreira is. Literally the exact type. Now, I'm listening to, watching the broadcast, watch it twice, and hear the pundits and experts talk about how, he didn't finish those two chances. Those aren't easy chances.
No.
I guess I don't see any really negative from this U.S. team in these two games, because Uruguay's a very good team. And to me, I feel like that's U.S. soccer Twitter and just the environment is – it's always so negative, but Ferreira is a perfect type of guy for how you want to play. Can come underneath, can link mm-hmm. up. Also, though, has pace to get in behind, makes those runs. He scored a bunch like that with FC Dallas. He's actually a good finisher in the league. Mm-hmm. If you watch him mm-hmm. game in and game out, he's a good finisher. He works hard defensively. I mean, I am so positive about him. So I'm the complete opposite, but I just don't understand how people watch this team play and could think any negative sort of thoughts or feelings about this group of young players.
Well, I think what the problem is, you know, U.S. soccer Twitter is just such a terrible place to be.
Well, it's not reality. I mean, someone tweeted, and I thought this was, like, perfect. If the U.S. had gotten this result in qualification, it would have been – everyone would have been like, yes, like, yeah. Amazing. But because I think now I think there is that extra pressure now where it was like, whoever's starting at the nine, I think people want to see goals, no matter who the opponent is, which isn't necessarily the right logic, but, I mean –
it's an oversimplistic viewpoint of the number nine position to say that it's all about goals. Of course, that's part of the job, and it's a big part of the job. There's many other parts to the job, too. And teams that have had number nines who don't score have won World Cups, just like the last World Cup. I would point that out to people. But the problem with it, to me, is people have decided to dig into their camps. Those that support American-based players in MLS – and those that think that the only good players are in Europe. And so if you're one of those people that wants to defend all the MLS players, you think Paul Arriola played well and you think Scali played terribly and Ferreira didn't finish his chances. If you support MLS players, or, you know, and I mean, I cross those over, but you understand what I'm saying. If you think that all the European players are the only ones that are good, Joe Scally's just an 18-year-old that needs more opportunities and should be given more of a chance, and Jesus Ferreira shouldn't be out there. And it's can we not just evaluate the players and separate
like
them
for just who they are as players?
And so that's the part that drives me a little bit nuts about the conversation. My thoughts, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, Jacob, about Ferreira. I'm with you. I thought the first shot attempt was actually really impressive. The way he took his first touch was immaculate, and he turned and he squeezed off a shot with power on it in a very tight window against a really good experienced center back. To me, the fact that he turned that into a decent shot on goal shows that's what a good number nine does. It wasn't a goal. That's I don't know what the XG on that is, but it couldn't have been very high, in my opinion. The second one, yes, it was right at the doorstep, but that ball was flying at him.
It wasn't a good ball.
The fact that he got on it, to me, was impressive. You know, so I don't think it's fair to say he should have scored that. My one, if I had a gripe or a nitpick, I guess, was I didn't feel like his hold-up play was great sometimes. When the U.S. was pinned back, they were trying to play out of the back, but every once in a while they'd have to lump one up the field. And I felt like he kind of got bullied off the ball by the two big center backs from Uruguay a little bit. And I could understand if somebody wanted to say, hey, if you're playing England and you don't have as much of the ball, you need somebody up there that can hold it. Is that a fair criticism?
That's fair. But let's not forget that those three center backs from Uruguay are top center backs in the world.
And experienced
guys who have played in Champions League finals and won La Liga. It, to me, like, this is why we can't have nice things, right? We finally have all these good players, and we somehow still are trying to poke holes. We have a bunch of options. Like, let's just appreciate it, watch these players develop, and we'll see what happens in 5 months. But 4 years, that's really when this group is going to start to mature. And I mean, obviously, Miles Robinson, you guys know how I feel about him. I thought, that's a big loss, I think, just how he can physically dominate a game. Yeah. And he has cover. It doesn't matter. You can push guys forward, and he's going to cover that depth and be able to track attackers down. But that's going to be an interesting one to see who can lock down. I love Aaron Long. I think he's a really athletic guy, too. Maybe not to the same extent that Miles is, but – I mean, he plays in that Red Bull system that's go, 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 go. His fitness is really good. He's strong. He's good in the air. Decent enough passer of the ball. I mean, that's who I go with, but there are so many other guys. EPB, obviously, is a guy who, personally, I want to play there, but goalkeeper will be interesting, too. Matt Turner, for me, is definitely the number one. But there's so many good options.
It comes back to that depth,
options.
Though, that we were talking about. Yep. I mean, that's going to be so important. And just, like, to put a cherry on the number nine, I mean, even if it wasn't a perfect game for Ferreira in all areas, he's going to be, one, better from the experience, and two, as you were talking about some of his strengths, I think when you're looking at those different positions on the field and who's going to start where and who maybe locks down those spots, it's what makes the strengths of the team stronger. And he does make one of the biggest strengths of this team, which is the midfield, stronger with his style of play.
So, you know, I'm with you on 2026. This team's going to be even more ready. But I'm not willing to write off this one because I think these young guys are brash. I don't think they're afraid. I don't think Ferreira's afraid. I think he's got the gumption and the swagger to go play on a big stage and catch some countries by surprise this time around. These next few months, when the fall starts in Europe, are going to be so big in some of these areas, and the decisions that players are making as to where they are going to play are going to make such a big impact. Because let's think about it. This time last year, like you said, it was all Ricardo Pepi when he was banging in goals for FC Dallas. He goes to Augsburg, doesn't score any goals, and now is he going to be in the mix? Where does he end up playing, you know, this coming fall? Gianluca Busio, can he get himself in? If this move happens with, you know, Aronson going to Leeds, how does he play there? Now that he's going to be playing on a bottom table team in England instead of a top table team in Austria. Matt Turner has made the calculated decision to go be the number two at Arsenal instead of the number one at New England, and he thinks that's going to help his chances. These are all difficult decisions to be made by these players.
They are. But I don't think Matt Turner made that decision to think I'm going to go be the number two. I think he's thinking of it as, one, you are an Arsenal fan, so one of the biggest clubs, though, in the world wants to sign you.
Yep.
You, as a player, I thought I was the best winger in MLS when I played.
Right.
That's not true. That nobody objectively would say that, but me, that's how I felt. Matt Turner, he's not thinking I'm going to be the backup. He's thinking I'm going to go there and take that number one job, and that's going to be mine. And this is an opportunity that he couldn't turn down to go to one of the biggest clubs in the world. So I don't fault him for that at all. It's more interesting the field players and how those guys are. Brendan Aaronson obviously switching leagues like that, but man, he's got that fire
like him.
About him, man.
Yeah, I like
that's
him.
Why I love him. Yeah. I love watching him play.
No, yeah. it's a huge move and one where I think when you look at how important these next few months are, like you said, it's like who's going to take some of those opportunities and have it make them better and put them in an even greater position than they may even be in right now? Because Jacob, I'm curious like your thoughts on this, because I think you could get into like the question of, well, you know, what puts some of these players in the best position to make that final roster, and, you know, what do they need to get from these clubs? Like what can they give these clubs and what can they put out there? What product can they put on the field to put themselves in good position? But what can these clubs also provide them to help put them from a training standpoint and from just a day-to-day competition around them standpoint to put them in good position?
Well, I mean, to answer the first part, they to me, you got to be getting some minutes. You got to be playing. And it doesn't really – I mean, talked about there's going to be a surprise guy that somehow – maybe we're not even talking about him right now, or maybe Brandon Vasquez keeps scoring crazy goals for FC Cincinnati and he sneaks on the team. I mean, Hercules Gomez, when he left Kansas City and it was like, I don't really think he's good enough for MLS, he goes down to Mexico and absolutely crushes Mexico, leads the league in scoring, and he's starting for the U.S. in the World Cup 6 months later. So there's going to be a surprise. But guys got to be getting minutes. It doesn't matter if you're as a field player. I think especially you have to be playing games. And we have too much depth for if you're not in form and playing, that it's not just because you play for X club anymore. You have to have that consistency.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to have Uri Rizel join us when we come back. This is the Sporting Kansas City Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
And welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, wherever you get your podcasts and stream your video content. And, of course, we're presented by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. We are happy to be joined now by midfielder for Sporting Kansas City, Uri Rizel. Uri, how are you, man?
I'm good. How about you guys?
We're doing great. Thank you so much for joining us. And how are you feeling after a little bit of a break? I feel like you guys really needed it after 7 games in 22 days. What was it like to have a little bit of time down?
Yeah, for sure. It's been great, you know, have a little bit of a reset and especially for the body, because with that many games, also like traveling, it was a tough schedule. I think I never had it as packed as these couple weeks. So yeah, it's good to have some days off.
So what did that time off look like for you? Did you get out of town? Did you stay in Kansas City? What did you do?
Yeah, so we actually went to Colorado.
Oh, nice.
We did some of the trails in the Rocky Mountains just to chill there. So it was a great time to reset.
You and your wife?
Yeah.
Are you guys very outdoorsy?
Yeah, we like it. We really like, you know, nature and I think since we have the possibility to go there and a national park, it was a good choice for some days.
Did you go to Rocky Mountain National Park? Is that where you went?
Yeah.
Did you hike some mountains? How aggressive were you with the hikes?
No, not crazy hikes, but definitely one day we did a bit of a hike, which was nice to see. You know, it was a little bit snowy up there, but it was so nice.
I know that there were some other like outdoorsmen on the team. Did you get any tips from any of your teammates, or did you guys just we're going?
Well, no, actually yes. Roger Espinosa kind of gave me some things to do there, especially that trail that we talked before. So it was good to have somebody that kind of gives you some guidance.
I would have gotten lost.
Yeah, you're giving me some happy memories, because my family and I, for about 5 years, we had aunts and uncles and cousins, 15 to 20 of us, right over Memorial Day weekend, basically roughly the same time a year, would go to Estes Park, which is a little town right on the border of Rocky Mountain National Park, and go hiking. And I love it because, I don't know about you, but for me, I have a difficult time just sitting around. Like, if I'm just laying at a beach chair all day long, I start to get a little antsy.
Right.
I like to be up in the mountains like in Colorado, because you can go do some things, but it's still relaxing at the
right,
same time.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, so we stayed at Estes Park.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was good, you know, and also trying to go to the local restaurants and kind of have the full experience.
Little ice cream shops,
yeah,
along
exactly.
downtown.
Yeah.
And all that. It's,
yum.
It's,
yeah, it's really nice.
It's a beautiful little spot. Well, that's good. Yeah. So what do you think of the Rocky Mountains? I mean, had you spent much time up in the mountains in the United States before?
I would like to go more, and probably once my career is done, I'm gonna do that. But I went to the Grand Canyon, Zion Park, and Bryce Park so far.
I was actually thinking about this. One of the things that is great about the United States is, because the country is so big, you can see a lot of different types of places.
Right.
You know, you can go to beaches, you can go to the mountains, you can go to swamps, you can go kind of all these different, you know, parts of the world all in one country. Over in Europe, I feel like you almost have to go to different countries, right?
Right.
So did you do a lot of mountain stuff? Switzerland is the place I always think of if I think of mountains in Europe. Did you do a lot of mountain stuff growing up in Europe?
Yeah, so where I live is like an hour from Barcelona, but also an hour from the Pyrenees,
okay.
In France.
Oh, nice.
So we used to go there skiing, and do some running there and trails. So it's always been kind of in my blood. And my past 4 years were in Orlando, so it was good to have beach and sun, but I didn't have the mountains.
Yeah.
And here in Kansas City, we have some, but not as big as in Colorado, so it was the perfect timing. And since it's kind of close, so that's why we chose to go there.
I love to ski. Like, that's one of my favorite. I did it a lot growing up, and then went a few years like where we didn't go skiing. And then my fiance, almost husband, is he's obsessed with skiing. So we've gone like 4 times together in like the 4 years we've been together. But that's
not a cheap hobby.
It is not. But when you're only going for 2 people, it's
yeah.
a lot different than when you're trying to bring the whole family.
That's true. I took my family 1 time, yeah. and I was like, I think I'm still paying for that trip.
So Uri, what's the coolest place you've ever been?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I think I've been had the luck to go to a lot of places, and I think kind of each one, it sounds like a cliche, right? But it kind of gives you a different perspective and has good things. but obviously I wanna keep doing it more, and I feel like once you start traveling and see new things, you don't wanna stop, right? So definitely I'm looking forward for that.
We're visiting with Uri Rossell, and we're going to get back to the team here in a little bit, but it's just kind of fun to get a chance to connect with you and get to know you a little bit. And we've had this running joke as a broadcast crew a little bit that it seems like every person we get who comes to Sporting Kansas City who is of Catalan origin is like this really thoughtful, intelligent I mean,
just
I'm sounding,
nice.
Yeah, just like genuinely
very
nice person. Right. Fonte, you, Elie, it's there's like this. Is that just the culture? Are we lucky? Do we just happen to get three great guys that are from that area, or is that something that's in the culture of where you grew up?
Well, thank you. I'm flattered now. I don't know. I feel like just the fact that we are from the same place and. The culture is pretty much the same, so it may have some influence on that, and I feel like just the fact also that I left home early kind of gives you also a little bit of more perspective as individual, as a person. So I think that always will help to be better. But thank you.
So when you say you left home early, how old were you?
So I was 19 when I came here the first time.
Yeah. Wow. But in terms of like joining the I assumed you meant actually joining the academy in Barcelona. How old were you when you joined? And did you still stay at home when you did that? Or
yeah, so actually, yeah. So Barca, what they did is if you were living outside of Barcelona, they would put like a taxi and you would still be in your hometown and then every day you would go to Barcelona to train and they will bring you back unless you are from like 3 hours away or 4 hours away, that then probably you have to stay there.
Yeah. So how did that all come about? So you're like what, 14 years old, you're a young kid. What was going on before you joined the youth system there?
Yeah, so I was in my hometown, which is 4,000 people there, small one.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I did a couple of years there, and then a bigger club called me to go there, and I was there, and then I had the possibility to go to Real Madrid, which was crazy because I was playing in small little towns, and there was that guy that came and said, hey, talk to my mom, say, hey, we want Uri to be in Real Madrid. And she was like, are you joking? and no. And they flew us back to Madrid to saw the stadium, to see the facilities. But since I was very young, I had to stay there at the academy, and I didn't want to leave my hometown. And there was the possibility to go to Espanyol, which is like the rivalry in FC mm-hmm. Barcelona. And I did 1 year there, and then I went to Barca for 7 years, and then here.
So a town of 4,000 people. It was cool. We had Johnny Russell on the show. This was a few weeks, maybe a couple months back, and he was talking to us about playing just backyard football in Scotland growing up and what that looked like. What did kind of playing on the playground with your friends look like in where you grew up?
Right. So where I used to live, my house was right in front of the school that I was going, and we had like a soccer place there, but it was like concrete. And I all the time, when we had some time off during the school, we would go there, and then after the school we were still there, and this is how it started. I didn't go to the to academy or whatever. I just played there, and when I was older enough to tell to my parents, look, all my friends are going to the academy. Can I go there? And then it's when I went there.
I feel like playing on concrete is probably good for your touch, too.
Yeah. And for your knees, too.
Yeah, not so much. You gotta stay on your feet, right?
Right.
So you go to the Barca Academy, La Masia.
Mm-hmm.
I get this sense that there's such an education process. We know that Barcelona, they have this system. They have players that they see for different positions. Your position, the six, is a very important one, obviously. Right. Could you describe what the learning process is like as a kid there? Maybe because I feel like talking to you, talking to Ilya, you get the sense you're talking to somebody who has some really strong ideas about the game of soccer and mm-hmm. how it should be played. What was that education process like?
Yeah, I think in our position in Barcelona, it was very important to understand that you are the one who has to read the game probably the best, because the way they were playing, they want to have the possession, they want to put the team under pressure and be always in a good position to recover the ball back when you lose it attacking. So what I learned early on, it was just looking at the players in the first team, which was Busquets, Xavi, mm-hmm. Iniesta, all of these guys. What they did really well was understand where they have to be on the field and checking everything before they get the ball, right? So you have an edge, just knowing exactly the picture before you get the ball, then you don't even have to think if somebody's coming through you or not. You already know where you're going to pass it, so you just focus on the technique. So I try to do that until now. I'm trying to do it because it's so easy to get caught up on the game just watching the ball that then is shit. I'm getting the ball. How am I? I'm in a good position, or then it's when you try to see where the team it is and they will steal the ball from you. So I think that's one of the qualities that you have to have, and the better you do that, the better you are as a player.
Do you feel that was always naturally a strength of yours, your ability to read the game, or was it something that you really had to teach yourself?
I would say both. Obviously, you have to have something to be in Barcelona, but definitely I just try to learn as much as possible from the first team and also from the coaches, and that was my only thought. Just try to do your best you can be, and then things work out. But if it didn't, at least I was I had my mind in peace because I try my best.
Was there ever a time where that you can remember, like just a big learning moment, whether it was in a game or a training session, where something happened and it just kind of shifted in your mind how you maybe went going forward, maybe a mistake that you made or a conversation with a player or a coach that happened?
I had a few key turning points, and I think it's more as a personal connection with a coach that kind of gives you the confidence to and encourage you to do better. And since I was a kid, and obviously Peter, when I arrived here, was one of those coaches. So and I think that when they give you this confidence and you kind of believe it that you can do it, and then it's way more easier.
So one of the things that you talked about, the big responsibility in the system, is because it's a system that's designed on attacking, that the six has to be able to be in a position to win the ball back if you lose possession, shut off those counterattacks. Another part of the thing that's impressive to me, though, is I think we see sixes in other systems that can cover all kinds of ground and win tackles and break plays up, but they might not be great with the ball at their feet playing under pressure. And in this system, you're asked to play out of the back, right, even when the other team is pressing. And I feel, as a person who's not very skilled on the ball myself, when I'm in that situation and my back is to pressure,
right
in front of my own goal, the most dangerous place in the field to lose the ball.
Absolutely.
Your teammates have to have the confidence to know that when they're in trouble, they can play the ball to you and that you're going to deal with it.
Uh-huh.
Were you always good at that? I mean, how hard was it to learn that part of the
job?
Right,
yeah. So that's a great point because it's really true. So when you get the ball in those moments, you just gotta be very focused that you cannot miss it, because if you miss it, you have the center backs wide open and it's a clean shot. So definitely in those moments, anything can happen. But overall, I feel like If you are consistent doing these things, it will help the team more than the errors that you will make. Obviously, you cannot miss too many times, but I think it's worth it. And one of the things that I've done when I was younger, it was like a lot of first touches with my right or with my left, because as a midfielder, you don't know where you're going to get the ball from. And even like the long passes is something that I really work on, because sometimes you cannot do it just with your right foot. You just got to, sometimes the ball is in your left, so you got to pass with your left as better as you can.
How do you practice, because you mentioned those first touches, how do you practice playing with pressure that's coming from behind you? Because I do notice with players such as yourself, you always seem to know which way to turn, mm-hmm. And how to set the opponent up so that you can get him going to the wrong side. Is there a way to practice that, or do you have to get out in game action and work on that?
No, you definitely can practice these. There are some exercises that you can do, but also I feel like good players, what they do with their passes is kind of telling you where you have the opponent. So when I have to play a ball forward to one of my other midfielders, I'll just try to give them the ball where they have the space so they can turn easily, rather than play the ball where the opponent is, because then I'm making their life way more difficult. Mm-hmm.
So, Uri, moving now into present day, you know, back with Sporting Kansas City this season. Today's Tuesday that we're taping this, and we're out at training today watching a lot of, there was a lot of just kind of technical drills that you guys seem to be working on. And you specifically were working with some of the more advanced midfielders, chipping some balls into the box. You scored a couple of on your own as well. What are some other parts of your game that you're maybe working on and looking to develop?
Yeah, definitely those ones I think can make the most impact, because when you can like switch the ball, try to find some runs that they make the left wing or even the midfielders. If you get the ball right, it's pretty much one versus the keeper. So I feel like if I can keep improving those passes, will give us a little bit more of I would say fear to the other team.
I feel like the result against Vancouver at the very end of that stretch of seven games was unfortunate, because I felt like you guys were really actually starting to play some of the best soccer you played all year. And you were showing some character, mm-hmm. with all of the different adversity and injuries that you were dealing with at the time. To have that result, I'm sure, was disappointing. But now that you've got a little bit of time, you know, where you guys all got to go away, like we talked about going to Colorado and all of that, as you come back, do you still feel like you can build off of some of the good things that you were doing during those stretch of games?
No, absolutely. And as you said, it was hard first because we had a lot of games during a short period of time. And then the other one were the injuries. So a lot of guys had to play and keep playing, when usually with these situations you have another guys that can step in and then you don't have this weight on your legs, which probably didn't happen as much as it happened to us, to other teams. So that's an advantage to them. But sometimes you get five guys injured, seven, you never know. So, but definitely I think that we can grab a lot of good things from these games. Even the results didn't come as well as we wanted, but there's still a lot of in front of us, and definitely we will do our best to jump up.
So Uri, one thing that I wanted to make sure we brought up, and we're running out of time with you here, is your musical abilities. That's something that people love about Uri Rizal. You're a music critic. You play guitar. Really fun moment in preseason when you guys were out and you got up and joined the band at one of the places that you were at for dinner. You know, just have you picked up any new instruments? We learned that Ben Sweat was playing the ukulele when he was having his ACL recovery. So I feel like the more and more I talk to some of the guys, I'm like, we've got a real band situation here.
Yeah, that would be cool too. Yeah. Something. No, but definitely since I was 8 years old, I played drums. And that's my thing. And I have one at home. And it's good, you know, just go there. You take the stress out. you are more creative, you listen the songs that you like. So I think it's good. It's good, and I can kind of help you with the coordination, because you got to do four different things with the legs and the arms. So
my dad played drums, and we had a drum set at my house growing up. But my mom, because he stopped playing, but yet we, the four kids, would go down and play, and just about drove her crazy. So we got rid of the drums.
Banging on drums all the time. Who is your favorite? Is there? Do you have any favorite drummers that we might have heard of or anything like that?
Well, I have a few that you probably don't know, but but the one that I really liked was the one who died, was the Foo Fighters drummer lately.
That was
sad.
Have you seen the videos of this little girl that got up on stage and played with the Foo Fighters, played the drums? You'll have to. I can't remember the girl's name. Nandi. Her name is Nandi.
Okay.
If you go on social media, Dave Grohl got her up on stage and she played the drums, and he wrote a song for her and played the drums to it. And then he's been sending her videos of certain songs to play the drums, and then she'll play them and send the videos back. It's this back and forth on social media.
Adorable.
It's really, really, really cool.
Do you write songs?
No. Okay. I'll just...
Maybe someday.
I'll just play.
Okay. Well, that's great stuff. Hey, Uri, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it. And best of luck coming up this weekend against New England.
Thank you so much, guys. It was
fun.
All right. There's the drummer on the on the Ringo Starr of Sporting Kansas City, or Neil Peart, or I don't know, one of those guys. Uri Russell joins us right here. We'll be back to preview this big matchup between Sporting Kansas City and the New England Revolution national television game coming up on Sunday at Children's Mercy Park. Right after this, presented by Michelob Ultra.
You're listening to the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
And we're back to wrap things up quickly on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. Had a great conversation with Uri Russell. Now let's quickly look ahead to the game this coming weekend. Sunday at Children's Mercy Park, should be another beautiful day, hopefully at 2 o'clock, as Sporting KC take on the New England Revolution. These are two teams that I think a lot of us thought we were going to see an MLS Cup final last year, as they were two of the better teams all regular season. Both teams had a disappointing showing in the playoffs, and now both teams have either had injuries or players get sold and are having a tough time backing it up this year. And Jacob, now we've got news that Adam Buxa has played his last game for New England. So now they've sold Tajon Buchanan, Matt Turner, Buxa from that team. They've made $24 million, I believe, reportedly in those three sales. But this is kind of new wave MLS, right? Like, you get a great player and then you might be selling them on. You got to have somebody lined up to back him up right away.
I mean, if you would have told me that Sporting and New England are where they are right now after the seasons, I thought there were Seattle you could throw in there, but the three best teams in the league last year, right? And New England had a rough start with CCL and just a collapse in CCL down in Mexico when they had the 3-0 lead. But recently, they've been rounding into form. And five games unbeaten. They played Philadelphia their last game. Outshot them 22-5. And Philly's one of the best teams in the league. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt, though, that when you take out your leading goal scorer, seven goals with Buxa, sell him for $10 million-ish. Take out goalkeeper of the year, at least perennially. I mean, they're going to struggle. And they have struggled at the goalkeeping position. And that's going to be something to watch. But it's still a dangerous team. I mean, you still have the reigning MVP, Carlos Hill. He just pulls the strings, seven assists on the year. Their fullbacks get high and wide, and Brandon Bye, shout out to Portage, Michigan, because that's where Brandon Bye is from. He's got, what, 2 goals, 4 assists on the year. I think he's been the best right back in MLS this season. Jones on the other side also has 3 assists. So they're dangerous going forward still. They've got good players. They just had a struggle. As Sporting fans know, CCL can take that out of you, especially at the start, if you have a collapse like they did.
Yeah, but for Sporting KC, like, to be coming off of this break that was much needed, was out at training today talking to Peter Vermees, talking to some of the players, and just could really get that sense that it was a really good reset. It was a really lively training session today. They're finally back to a more normal week of preparation without all the midweek games, so getting to kind of work on and fine-tune some things. Still trying to get some guys in form, though, but Graham Zusi was back in training, Nikola Voinovich back in training, Kyrie Shelton back in training, so some of the bodies are starting to come back. Still going to be without Daniel Shalloway, who's on international duty, but Marinos Giannis should be back. So starting to see more healthy bodies for Sporting, which is a good sign, and I think even though that game against Vancouver, you know, kind of ended that long stretch of 7 games in 22 days in a way that, you know, was disappointing for the team. It wasn't the best performance, and 3 points were dropped. There were still a lot of results during that stretch that I think were good building blocks for the team, and you kind of get this sense that there is optimism, but at the same time, it's, you know, cautious optimism where it's like, yeah, there's still a lot of season left. We've got some good things starting to build, but if we continue to put ourselves in a hole or make steps backwards, it's going to get to a point, and this is what Johnny said today, that we can't climb ourselves out of that hole. So I think that has really, you know, been, you know, the mindset, hey, we're optimistic, we can turn it around, but we know that there's not a lot of time to waste anymore.
Okay, so maybe a renewed sense of urgency and energy for Sporting Kansas City coming off the break. I think they were still rounding into better form and playing better soccer, maybe ran out a little gas in mm-hmm. that Vancouver game, and we'll see if they can build off of that now going into this stretch of the summer that's coming up. The dog days of the MLS schedule are coming up. Maybe Sporting can make a move then. For Ali Trost and Jacob Peterson, this is Nate Bucati, and of course Jordan Burrell, making sure everything works smoothly here on the show today. We've been presented by Michelob Ultra. We'll see you next time on the Sporting Kansas City Show.